And now let's return for those direct reports from everywhere, brought to you now through Leon Pearson.
First, here is a local report just in. The Kansas City City Council has just declared a state of emergency in Kansas City, Missouri. All residents are called on to cooperate in carrying out all suggestions, orders, and proclamations which may be issued by city officials until this emergency is over. The City Council also advised the residents in Harlem to evacuate. And the Kansas City City Council also advised the North Kansas City officials to suggest to their residents in North Kansas City to evacuate. Now back to News of the World.
If the great Russian bear will frighten, this should do it. But let's look at the story point by point. Korea. The Kaesong roadblock still lies across the path of truce, and the whole project, which began with high hopes, has degenerated into a mudslinging propaganda exchange. If the end result of all this is to be a resumption of full-scale fighting in Korea through another winter for an endless time, it will be a bitter thing. But once you embark on the policy of fending off the enemy by being tough with him, you must be consistent in it. And we have taken the decision not to be cast by the communists in the role of supplicants, bearing white flags, escorted by their armed guards to and from the conference table. And our position is firm in Japan, an area which Russia had hoped to conquer by communist infiltration. In a matter of weeks, in San Francisco, the Japanese treaty will be signed and sealed without Russia. As for Europe, our position is firmer today, July the 13th, than it was even yesterday. Today at Bremerhaven, Germany, U.S. armored troops arrived. They call themselves Hell on Wheels, to keep, and this is a quotation from them, their leader, to keep the Russians out of Western Europe. But the story of air bases, which broke today in fresh detail, is the most striking of all. In Washington, the Armed Services Committee approved today a $1 billion secret project for the Air Force, a project for building air bases in Europe and North Africa and the Middle East, in short, in areas rimming Russia. It has long been known that our bombers are based in England, though it's never before been done in peacetime. But the public is unaware of the gigantic program of bases planned to run all the way from Casablanca on the west tip of North Africa to Saudi Arabia in the Middle East. The State Department said today that Saudi Arabia had agreed to let U.S. fighter and bomber planes use the strategic Dairan airfield for the next 5 years. This base is only about 1,500 miles from Russian territory. Thus it is that, as Secretary of Defense Marshall puts it, we strike a posture of defense. There are some thoughtful and intelligent people in the United States and in Europe, especially in Europe, who think that a posture of defense which reaches so far toward the enemy can be of itself provocative. But the thoughtful and intelligent people who shape our foreign policy and our defense planning are banking on the belief that when it becomes apparent to Russia that we are ready and near at hand to strike with a great number of atom bombs if a war begins, then Russia will recoil from aggression and we shall have peace in the world. Now, news by direct report. Both man and nature can be ruinous to the land. For a report on the ruins wrought by nature, we turn to station WDAF, Kansas City, and Walt Bodine.
Kansas City is battling the most disastrous flood ever to strike this metropolitan area of some 854,500 persons. Right now, the city council is meeting to decide whether to declare a state of emergency. Besides the devastation of flood, the city is plagued now with fires, traffic jams, and a major pumping station knocked out. Kansas City is boiling all water for drinking and cooking purposes. Now a runaway barge is at this moment careening down the river, imperiling two important bridges. Storage tanks of two oil companies exploded this afternoon on the west side. Firemen waded into floodwaters waist deep to battle the raging flames that threaten still other tanks in the area. In Kansas City, Kansas, in the Argentine section, first to be inundated, other firemen had a long fight to bring another blaze under control. That one began in a half-submerged filling station and spread on blazing waters to a home and a transfer company. The swirling Kaw River floodwaters swept first into the Argentine district, then the big industrial Armordale section. This afternoon, the angry waters spilled over dikes into Kansas City's rich central industrial district, which contains a good share of this area's industrial empire. There, the Livestock Exchange building and adjoining stockyards also are underwater, as well as the vast American Royal plant, scene of famous horse and livestock shows. Now a precautionary alert has been issued for another huge area, the Northeast Industrial District. Just back from the disaster scene in the Central Industrial Section is Kansas City Star reporter Kim Clark. You saw the water start over the dikes, didn't you, Kim?
Yes, Walt. First waves splashed over the dike. Then it looked like the whole river was coming at us. Less than an hour later, water covered everything within half a mile of the river.
And did you have to hustle to get out?
I never knew I could start a car so fast.
And what else did you see?
Several buildings as large as an ordinary theater floated away like matchboxes. Thousands of squealing hogs were swept out of stockyards, most of them drowned, but quite a few were grabbed up by disaster opportunists.
Thanks, Kim Clark of the Star staff. This is Walt Bodine in Kansas City.
Here in New York, when district court opened this morning, there was tension in the courtroom. Judge Ryan's finding that the bail of 15 communist leaders was unacceptable had been overruled by Judge Hand. Judge Ryan felt strongly about the matter. So did Judge Hand. Was it a crisis in the federal bench? The tension was soon relaxed. Judge Ryan announced that the communists should be freed on bond, that their bond would now be reaccepted. And he said of the higher court, Judge Hand has ruled. I have nothing but the most wholesome respect for Judge Hand, and this court will obey his ruling. Now more news by direct report. The deep-throated sounds you hear these days coming from the direction of the Hudson River are the transatlantic liners arriving and departing. Today they brought and took away some very excited people. For the story, here is Lockwood Doty.
America's number one Goodwill ambassadress came home from Europe today, but less than 2 hours after she docked, some 630 other emissaries of the American way sailed for Europe. Margaret Schumann docked in New York, the maiden voyage of the liner Constitution, and across the harbor in Hoboken, New Jersey, 630 Boy Scouts left aboard the liner Argentina for Scouting's World Jamboree in Austria. It's hard to say who was happier, the Scouts to be leaving or Margaret to be getting home. The Scouts put it this way. But Miss Truman had this to say.
I had a wonderful time. Everything was fascinating. Glad to be home.
Very chic in a white straw hat, a navy blue linen suit, and blue gloves, the president's daughter mentioned her stay in Paris.
Oh, you've never seen a woman that went to Paris yet that didn't buy something, have you?
Aboard the Argentina, the Boy Scouts were serious as they heard the words of Margaret's father, a letter to them read by Eagle Scout Ronald Stein of the Bronx, New York.
Count yourselves as goodwill ambassadors of our nation while you are abroad as participants in the 7th World Scout Jamboree. Live your Scout Oath and Law day by day, and you will make many new friends for the United States and the countries you visit. Your Jamboree will be another living lesson to all nations that boys can work and play, sing and pray together as brothers, just as all men might, if an evil-minded minority would only let them. Harry S. Truman.
And from John Schiff, president of the Scouts National Council, a reminder.
Boys, you're off on a wonderful trip. You're going to be representing this country. I know you'll do a good job. Whatever you do, that is well done. Other people will say that's an American boy.
And so off to Europe for 630 Scouts. A great day for American ambassadors of goodwill. This is Lockwood Doty speaking.
And now a capital report in 2 minutes. Like a target that's been hit at the bullseye and at the edge and in the middle, the administration's economic controls bill was hit again today. The House of Representatives, in a rebellious spirit, what there were of them, voted to reject President Truman's request for unlimited authority to set up new federal corporations. The vote was 92 to 39, or a total of 131, which means a very thin attendance. 300 members were not there. Washington, it's now pretty clear that officials feel in the Korean matter, the proper basis for an armistice is the present line north of the 38th parallel, not the parallel itself. Secretary Acheson supported this view today. This will offer a new difficulty in the negotiations if and when resumed. Acheson also disclosed that a number of State Department employees, in addition to Davies and Club revealed yesterday, have been suspended recently for security reasons until their cases are heard. Belgrade, Yugoslavia. Marshal Tito declared today the pressure by the Soviet satellites on his borders has become greater since the ceasefire discussions began in Korea. Tito was in a caustic mood. For the first time, he denounced Stalin, whom he once admired and served, by name. Stalin, he said, is known the world over for his mustache, but not for his wisdom. I'll be back in a moment with more news. Now, here's Tom Moore.
Relief from the miseries of a headache can be as easy as dropping one or two Alka-Seltzer tablets into a glass of water. Yes, friends, when you drink that sparkling, effervescent solution, you'll be amazed how fast you feel better. So remember, when you're suffering from the misery of a headache, it's Alka-Seltzer for fast, pleasant, and effective relief. Get Alka-Seltzer from your druggist today and have it handy for whenever you need it. Now Alka-Seltzer returns you again to Leon Pearson.
And here are signs of our times. In Danbury, Connecticut, a year ago, a well-to-do spinster of 74 died in the house which she occupied with Dr. Donald F. Gibson, age 49, who was her physician and her heir. Today, a grand jury indicted Dr. Gibson for manslaughter in connection with her death. 250 years ago, a Frenchman named Antoine Cadillac established a tiny settlement in the north-central part of America, which has today become one of the largest cities of the world, Detroit. Today, the White House announced that President Truman will go to Detroit July 28th to join in celebrating the 250th anniversary of what Monsieur Cadillac has founded. 6 years ago, there was clamor in the United States for the head of Hirohito. The emperor of the dirty yellow Japs must hang. Today, Governor Thomas E. Dewey of New York paid a visit to Emperor Hirohito at the Imperial Palace. President Truman said goodbye today to W. Averill Harriman as Harriman took off for Iran. The president used a phrase which seemed aimed to reassure the British when he said, "We have no selfish interest in this matter whatsoever." The police chief of Haverhill, Massachusetts, William J. Collins, brought to court a complaint that he had been assaulted by a citizen of the town. He struck me four or five times and had his hands on my neck. Today, that citizen paid a $25 fine imposed by the court. His name, Joseph Willett, mayor of Haverhill. And that's the news of the world, transcribed and direct. Until tomorrow at the same time, this is Leon Pearson speaking for Alka-Seltzer, saying goodbye from the newsroom in New York.
Mothers, one-a-day brand multiple vitamins taken every day ensure against vitamin deficiency. Lack of essential vitamins pulls you down, makes you look and feel dull and listless. Often develops into vitamin deficiency disease. Take care of yourself and your family. See that every member takes one-a-day brand, multiple vitamins every day. And be sure it's one-a-day brand in the blue package with the big one. The vitamins developed by Miles Laboratories, makers of Alka-Seltzer. Remember, one-a-day brand, vitamin.
This is WDAF in Kansas.
Something to him without even having a quorum in the chamber. The House rejected by a vote of 92 to 39. Over 300 members were absent. The President's request for unlimited authority to set up new corporations as government agencies. The House said such agencies should be created only by the Congress. This was a part of the administration request for economic controls, and thus the whole project of controls had another hole shot through it. And the President, in his turn, did something to a certain senator who was showing more and more the marks of a presidential candidate, Paul Douglas of Illinois. Some time ago, Douglas sent the president his recommendations for appointments to the federal bench. In Illinois, three appointments. But the president, when he acted today, followed the request of Douglas in only one instance, which has all the marks of a White House snub. Things are getting cool between these two men, either, but not both, of whom might be the Democratic Party's candidate for president next year. More important for the fate of the world than these Pennsylvania Avenue activities was the decision which the president took part in to draw a line across the map in Korea, a line that is not the 38th parallel. It is now emerging that the United States and the United Nations intend to propose to the communists, if and when the discussions are resumed, that the ceasefire line or armistice line be the present line of demarcation between the forces, which is well north of the parallel in most cases. This is in conflict with the Malik proposal, which started the ceasefire conversations. Malik proposed a ceasefire at the 38th parallel. But to accept that line would mean a withdrawal for UN forces and an advance for the communists. The first official statement that we will not accept the 38th parallel came by indirection at Secretary Acheson's press conference this afternoon. This decision was reached in conference with the President and the Joint Chiefs of Staff. So the President concerned himself with Korea and with Mexico and with Iran. He sent a message to Congress urging that measures be taken to stop the phenomenal numbers of Mexican immigrants, wetbacks, who are coming illegally into the United States. He would punish not only the wetbacks, but also the persons who aid them to enter, who conceal them within the country. He said the fullest opportunity must be given to those of our citizens who seek employment on the farm. And the President said goodbye to Averill Harriman, who then took off by plane for Iran to help find what the diplomats call a modus vivendi in the oil controversy. And the President acknowledged the request of U.S. Ambassador to Iran, Dr. Henry Grady, to resign. His position has become uncomfortable with rumors that he would be replaced and also with the coming of Harriman to do what is essentially his job. The background of what the United States is trying to do in the Iranian case was explained this evening by Assistant Secretary of State George McGee. Here in 60 seconds is the heart of the problem as he states it.
The problem has in the main originated in Iran, not outside. It stems in most part from the deep desire of the Iranian people to better their way of life. The difficulty is that the Iranians, in giving expression to this understandable feeling of nationalism, and in seeking to secure more benefit from their petroleum resources, might actually take hasty and poorly thought out actions which can run contrary to their best interest. Now, Mr. Harriman wings his way to Tehran to find out more about this situation. We have no magic formula for the settlement of this difficult problem which has arisen between our two friends. We do hope, however, that a solution can be found, even a temporary solution, which will permit the Iranians to receive the maximum possible benefit from their oil resources and will permit the West to continue to contribute to the Iranian oil industry and to benefit from it.
But undoubtedly the most heartwarming thing the President did today was to receive back into his arms the young lady he is very proud of, that ambassador without portfolio just returned from Europe, Miss Margaret Truman. Now news by direct report. From Denver, two hydrologists went to Kansas to get a report on the heavy rains which have caused the Kansas flood. They are getting plenty of material. When last heard of, they were marooned in the Emporia area, unable to move. But our correspondent, we hope, is not marooned. For the latest news, let's switch now to station WDAF, Kansas City, and Walt Bodine.
A state of emergency has been proclaimed in Kansas City tonight as this city and eastern Kansas continue to take a fierce beating from the raging Kaw River. The swirling, muddy waters have swept into three big industrial areas. Now it's recommended that those in the North Kansas City area evacuate. Instructions are being broadcast one after another. Close all non-essential businesses. Boil drinking and cooking water. Sightseers, go home. Tonight, an almost constant wail of sirens can be heard in parts of Kansas City. A big fire is still burning in a two-block oil storage area. Four firemen burned and two overcome. Two runaway barges struck the airport bridge and it's been closed. Police are working 12-hour shifts. Tonight, every major city in the Kaw River Valley is isolated from Kansas City west to Junction City, Kansas, 150 miles away. In North Lawrence, there were fears for the safety of 35 to 100 persons marooned in two school buildings. In Topeka, emergency squads worked at evacuating 10,000 more persons. That means perhaps a fourth of Topeka's 80,000 population will have had to flee their homes. Refugees there crowded into municipal auditorium, other public buildings, and private homes. The flood death toll stands now at 13, but many, many persons are missing. Damage up to now is estimated at $300 million, and at least 40,000 are homeless. The only bright spot is that no rain of consequence fell today, and none is expected. Just back from the flood area is Henry Christman of Kansas City. Where did you see the floods, Mr. Christman?
Near Pleasanton, Kansas, we stopped at a home where the waters were rising at unbelievable speed. We helped move what we could to the third floor and had to be evacuated by motorboat just as the water started lapping at the second floor.
And what else did you see in Kansas?
In eastern Kansas, we met a man who told us he drove 20 miles to get a truck to move furniture from his home in Osawatomie. When he returned with the truck, only a little of the rooftop of his house was sticking out of the water, but neighbors had managed to move his belongings along with theirs.
There's the flood picture. This is Walt Bodine in Kansas City.
And it was a flood that bothered Ted Sirks, a flood which is called the Pacific Ocean. For that story, we switched to San Francisco and Bob Letts.
About 800 miles west of Honolulu Wednesday afternoon, a sailor named Ted Sirks of Catalina Island, a crewman aboard one of the yachts in the Trans-Pacific race from Los Angeles to Hawaii, was washed overboard as he was repairing the rigging on a boom. The yacht, called La Poche, was under full sail. Other crewmen tossed Sirks two life rings, one with an automatic light on it, but before the yacht could turn around, Sirks and the boat were a mile apart in a heavy sea. He was in the water 30 hours with one ring before a Navy destroyer escort found him on a final turn before ending the search. The DE is due in Honolulu tomorrow, but newsmen talked with him by shortwave radio, and NBC here in San Francisco recorded that conversation. Here's a summary. He saw the yacht turn about and hunt for him, but the seas were too heavy for him, a small dot in a big rough ocean, to be noticed. Two sharks swam about him as the evening settled in, and thank God, said the 40-year-old man, they didn't see me at night. Night set in around 10 p.m., and Sirks thought about his plight. A crazy way to go, healthy and all that, he thought, and his wife and mother in Los Angeles. It's harder on them than on me. I'm not in any pain or anything. The night wore on. He began dozing and would roll over in his life ring and swallow salt water. Sweet, fresh water, how he wanted some. Came Thursday dawn, he saw airplanes sweeping the area and occasionally a ship and some more sharks. He killed one seven-footer, and then, as the Navy DE made her last turn, two seamen spotted Sirks. He could really laugh at a radiogram sent by three pals at home which said, "We play no more poker with anybody having your luck." This is Bob Letts in San Francisco.
And now around the world in 2 minutes. New York, 15 of the so-called second-team leaders of the Communist Party have been freed again on bond posted by the left-wing Civil Rights Congress. They were released from jail when federal Judge Sylvester Ryan yielded to a ruling by Judge Learned Hand of the U.S. Court of Appeals, a ruling that reversed Judge Ryan and disappointed the government. Chicago, Walter White, Executive Secretary of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, is heading west tonight for a personal investigation of the race riots in Cicero, Illinois. White charges that the rioting has been planned for a long time with evidence of expert agitation in its leadership. Los Angeles, no need to tell Mickey Cohen it was an unlucky day this Friday the 13th. He knows for two reasons. First, he lost out on a bid for release on bail pending his appeal from conviction of income tax evasion. Secondly, the government filed a claim of $313,000 against his property, including his palatial home in exclusive Brentwood. Cohen's wife, Levon, was given 20 days to leave home. Tokyo. Reports from the Korean War front indicate the Reds are strengthening their main lines during this current lull. An Allied officer on the Western Front says they probably could not launch an offensive in the near future, but he adds their capabilities are increasing. Meanwhile, the U.S. Army estimates that overall Red casualties in the war have now reached 1,200,000 men. Detroit. A 32-year-old office worker died today, but his posthumous benefaction may help a near-blind mother of six to see again. With the permission of his family, the corneas of Lawrence Shannon's eyes were transplanted into those of Mrs. Lena Campbell. The operation was successful. Its benefits will be known in a month. I'll have more news in a moment.
Now a message from Civil Air Patrol. All senior members of Civil Air Patrol are to be at Grandview Airport at 5:30 tomorrow morning. All pilots are requested to call headquarters at Victor 9155 tonight. The following was a message from the Civil Air Patrol. Once again to the newsroom in Washington and Leon Pearson.
And here are signs of our times. In Danbury, Connecticut, a year ago, a well-to-do spinster of 74 died in the house which she occupied with Dr. Donald F. Gibson, age 49, who was her physician and heir. Today, a grand jury indicted Dr. Gibson for manslaughter in connection with her death. 6 years ago, there was a clamor in the United States for the head of Hirohito. The emperor of the dirty yellow Japs must hang, that was the cry. Today in Tokyo, Governor Thomas E. Dewey of New York paid a visit to Emperor Hirohito at the Imperial Palace. Times have changed. From Dearborn, Michigan, news about Uncle Joe Clovis. Born in slavery in Louisiana, Clovis ran away from his master and joined the Union Army at the Battle of Vicksburg. He recalled fondly, "In the Army, I played the drum. I sure made a racket with that drum. A drum is proud, and it said everything I felt." Today, taps were sounded for Uncle Joe at the age of 107. And that's the news of the world, transcribed and directed.
Tomorrow is Variety Night on WDAF. At 7, you'll hear Eloise McElhone and her musical merry-go-round. At 7:30, the Magnificent Montague, alias Monty Woolley. Al Goodman's musical album joins the WDAF Saturday lineup at 8 o'clock, and starting at 8:30, you'll hear a full hour of comedy brought to you by Bob and Ray. News of the World with Leon Pearson will come to you again Monday night over WDAF, at 6:30 o'clock. This is WDAF, the Kansas City Star, Kansas City, Missouri. The Brooklyn Handicap Horse Race will be run tomorrow, and WDAF will broadcast this important sports event at 2:15 tomorrow afternoon. Time now 10:30. An interlude of transcribed music follows.
The boys is excellent and morale high. In the war news, there are indications the Korean ceasefire talks may be resumed. 20 Allied newsmen have been told to be ready to leave for Kaesong on 1 hour's notice. The Army radio broadcast a message from General Ridgway to Korean General Nam Il, accusing the communists of delaying the armistice talks. There you have the news. Now a word about Golden Wedding Coffee.
Are you one of those persons who needs a cup of coffee before starting the day? If you are, here's good news. The next time you oversleep and don't have time to put on the coffee...
Good evening. Because of the flood emergency, WDAF will remain on the air until 1 o'clock this morning, or tomorrow morning, rather, to keep you abreast of latest developments. That's till 1 a.m. And we'll be bringing you announcements pertaining to the flood situation from various official quarters. Here's a very important one just issued by the chief of Kansas City, Kansas Civil Defense, Roy Moulton. There is a possibility of the Kaw River going over its banks by 11 o'clock tonight or shortly thereafter in the Armourdale District. Under these circumstances, the Kansas City, Kansas Civil Defense Office recommends immediate evacuation of districts protected by the dikes. Sirens are now sounding in the Armourdale District and the North Argentine District to warn lowland residents to evacuate. The Kansas City, Kansas Chief of Police Earl Swarner says all traffic to the Armourdale District has been barred. Only those doing evacuation work will be permitted in the district. Wyandotte County Engineer Clay Roberts says sightseers please stay away from the river area. They're impeding the flow of emergency vehicles, sand trucks, and those checking the dikes. This is to correct an earlier story on the 10 o'clock news that the Sheffield Steel Plant, the Open Hearth, Wire Mill, and Bolt and Nut departments are in operation. The men should report for work in those departments tomorrow. That's in the Open Hearth, the Wire Mill, and the Bolt and Nut departments. The rolling mills are shut down, however, and those workers will not report. Also, state forecaster H.L. Jacobson asked us to make a correction on his weather broadcast a few minutes ago. He stated the Missouri River would crest at 30.5 feet at Kansas City at 8 o'clock tomorrow night. Mr. Jacobson says the correct figure for the crest is 32.5 feet. Evacuation of 10,000 more persons from flood-ravaged Topeka, Kansas is now underway. The Air Rescue Service, a specialized branch of the Air Force, has announced in Washington that it's feeding all available rescue aircraft to the state capital to aid in the emergency job. Some 10,000 other residents have already been removed from their threatened Topeka area homes, but new danger threatens as the swollen Kansas River nears an expected crest of 36 feet. Swirling floodwaters have surged over eastern and central Kansas, hitting hard at more than a dozen communities. Kansas' largest city, Wichita, has been warned to expect floodwaters from the Little Arkansas River Friday or Saturday. The Red Cross and other agencies are struggling with a mammoth job of relief and care for the homeless. Boys State Industrial School is one place they can't reach. It's marooned on a hilltop, but it's said to have plenty of food. More than 300 passengers stranded a few miles east of Cedar Point, Kansas, by floodwaters, sang by the light of a campfire tonight. 8 of the stranded passengers took advantage of a company offer and were flown 30 miles to Newton, Kansas. A 6-bus rescue convoy is trying to reach the stalled Santa Fe Streamliner, the El Capitan, but a bridge washout has stalled them in Florence, Kansas, 8 miles away. Here's the latest in the war news. General Matthew Ridgway has accused the communists of delaying and blocking armistice talks. In a broadcast message to Korean Communist General Nam Il, Ridgway said the United Nations delegates are prepared to resume the negotiations in good faith. His message also proposed the withdrawal of all armed personnel from the immediate truce talk area at Kaesong. Ridgway proposed that the road leading to Kaesong from the south be cleared of all armed personnel. He also suggested that all armed personnel be cleared from a circular area 5 miles in radius from Kaesong. Ridgway's message said that radio telephone communications would be kept open for the communist reply. They added if the Reds want to send a liaison officer with the reply, he would be afforded safe passage. Meanwhile, 20 Alive newsmen at the UN peace camp were told to be ready to leave for Kaesong on 1 hour's notice. It was the communist refusal to admit the newsmen to Kaesong that prompted the Illinois. We'd like to repeat that important bulletin we had at the beginning of this broadcast from the chief of Kansas City, Kansas, Civil Defense Roy Moulton, the possibility of the Kaw River going over its banks by 11 o'clock tonight or shortly thereafter in the Armourdale District. Under the circumstances, the Civil Defense Office of Kansas City, Kansas, recommends immediate evacuation of districts protected by the dikes. And for that reason, sirens are now sounding in the Armourdale District and North Argentine to warn the lowland residents to evacuate. And don't forget, it's a bad time for sightseeing. Sightseers should stay away and leave the way free for emergency vehicles, sand trucks, and those who are checking on the dikes. We repeat too, WDAF will stay on the air past its regular sign-off until 1 a.m. this morning in order to bring you the news as it happens on the current flood emergency.
These floodwaters, up in the upper reaches of the basin, in order to hold them back and regulate the flow, to prevent catastrophes, as you've seen in Kansas, Missouri, in the last...
Last voice was General Lewis Peck, who flew with President Truman today over the flood area. Previous to him, you heard Defense Mobilizer Charles Wilson, and the first voice was President Truman. The President will now go by motor car to Independence, where he will vote in a local bond election, then come back to the airport and return to Washington tonight. You've been just listening to these three dignitaries speaking at the Kansas City Grandview Airport near Kansas City, where the President has just returned an aerial tour of the flood-stricken areas of Kansas and Missouri. We return you now to your studio.
This is WDAF, the broadcasting station of the Kansas City Star, Kansas City.
Succeeding in Iran, the British socialists turn a new page, Moscow launches a new peace offensive, and the communists go back to jail. Those are the headlines. Now to Chicago for a brief message from Tom Moore and Company.
Jane, dear, will you please shut off that radio? I just can't stand it with this headache.
Yes, Mommy. Just a minute.
Friends, I know how you feel when you're miserable with a headache, but suffering that misery is so unnecessary. But Alka-Seltzer can give you such fast, such pleasant relief.
Don't shut off that radio yet, Jane. This is interesting.
All right, Mommy.
Just do this. Dissolve one or two Alka-Seltzer tablets in a glass of water. Let it fizz as Alka-Seltzer's relief-giving ingredients go into solution, and then drink it. See how fast you feel better. How pleasant Alka-Seltzer is to take. Get Alka-Seltzer at your drugstore and take it for quick relief from that headache.
Oh, Jane, I want you to go to the corner drugstore and get me a package of Alka-Seltzer. I'm glad I listened to that news program. I've always wanted Alka-Seltzer on hand anyway.
And now Alka-Seltzer returns you to the newsroom and Leon Pearson.
In the secret confines of the conference house at Kaesong, Korea, the talks are going well. Another session is being held this evening, our time. Newsmen covering that story report that the greatest obstacle seems to be the communist demand for withdrawal of all foreign troops. The present question is whether discussion of this matter should be put on the agenda or not. The UN negotiators contend it's a political question since it would mean abandonment of Korea to the superior communist influence. But the communists contend that withdrawal of military forces is a military question. In any case, they've got only as far as discussing whether to discuss it. Almost as bad as Lake's success. The soldiers, like the diplomats, are finding that in international talks, You've got to do a lot of fancy toe dancing. Today, we bought a copy of the Daily Worker here in New York. Incidentally, the most expensive paper in the city, 10 cents, 8 pages. And we find that a French front-page editorial says, and I quote, "The ceasefire negotiations represent the defeat of the imperialist forces that were out to conquer all Korea and spread the war to China," unquote. Today in Korea, mass flights of Allied fighter bombers blasted the communist supply centers, some of them only 33 miles north of the conference city of Kaesong. But in Washington, the Army said no U.S. soldier was killed in action in Korea yesterday, the first day without a combat death since the first days of the war. Now news by direct report. President Truman has been making a flying inspection tour of the flood scene. And according to our schedules, he is due to return to the Grandview Airport just about now after the tour of devastated areas. For a report from the scene to the facilities of station WDAF, we take you now to the airport in Grandview, Missouri.
Away from the plane. President Truman is nearing the end of his aerial look-see at the ravages of the worst flood in American history in Missouri and Kansas. We're speaking from the Kansas City Grandview Airport, where the president is due to return at any moment now. Earlier, Mr. Truman made a brief stop here, landing at 2:40 and departing again at 3:10 Central Standard Time. The airport was jammed with weary travelers because this airport south of Kansas City, serving temporarily in place of municipal air terminal, closed because of flood transportation difficulties. There was a round of applause as the president stepped briskly from the Independence, followed by Mrs. Truman and daughter Margaret. In summer heat of 90 degrees plus, Mr. Truman stood talking with old friends on the runway, especially about the seriousness of the flood damage. Among those who visited with the president were Roy A. Roberts of the Kansas City Star, Kansas City's Mayor William E. Kemp, former Kansas Senator Harry Darby, and U.S. Marshal Fred Canfield. Mrs. Truman and Margaret returned to the summer White House at Independence after arriving here with the president. Chief Defense Mobilizer Charles Wilson aboard the presidential plane said he'd have no statement until he returned from the flying survey of the flood damage. On the way here, the Independence passed over scenes of flood destruction on the Missouri River between Kansas City and St. Louis. As the fight continued, the president's brother and sister, J. Vivian Truman and Miss Mary Jane Truman, joined the presidential party along with Major General Lewis A. Pick, Chief of the U.S. Army Engineers. After taking off from the Kansas City Grandview Airport, the Independence, trailed by another big plane carrying news correspondents, was to fly over flood-ravaged areas of Kansas City, then west to Fort Riley on the Kaw River, and finally down to Miami, Oklahoma, one of the latest cities to face the perils of flood waters. This evening, before returning to Washington, President Truman is scheduled to go to Independence to vote in a special bond election. This is Walt Bodine in Kansas City.
In Washington today, the Senate voted an emergency relief fund of $25 million for the flood area, thus seconding the action of the House in granting more money than the president had proposed, namely $15 million. At the same time, the House took a significant vote on the moot question of economic controls. It was a vote on rollbacks, the power requested by the president to force reduction in prices to former levels. Today's vote was in favor of continuing the 10% beef price rollback and to allow also a 10% rollback in the price of all other farm products selling in excess of parity. This was somewhat short of the strong controls asked by the president, but in view of the recent mood of Congress on the question, the vote was regarded as a victory for the administration. Future controls in the form of gasoline rationing were indicated as a possibility today by Secretary of Interior Chapman, but the shortage he foresaw would come not from inadequate supplies of oil, but from inadequate allocations of steel to the oil industry. The Attorney General acted in the price field today. Remember the Macy-Gimbel's price war? In effect, the action of the Attorney General, McGrath, today was to support price-cutting stores like Macy's and Gimbel's from reprisal or force by manufacturers. He threatened criminal prosecution for anyone attempting to force cut-rate merchants to raise their prices. In other words, if the manufacturer of a toaster doesn't like to see it, he may not take action against the retailer to make him maintain the normal price. At this point in the broadcast, we would like to switch to an NBC correspondent in Moscow for a report on the new English language publication called The News, which is making a sensation because of its friendly tone toward the West. But unfortunately, NBC has no correspondent in Moscow, nor does any other network, American or foreign. Foreign broadcasting has been banned for some years. But foreign newsmen, including a few Americans, are still there. And they're sending out a string of stories on this new publication. The first was Eddie Gilmore's Associated Press on Saturday. Then came Henry Shapiro of the UP yesterday, plus Harrison Salisbury of the New York Times. And now today, another cable from the AP by Tom Whitney. All these stories make much of the theme of peaceful relations which appears in the new publication. Whitney writes that it's interesting the Russians are launching a publication with such sentiments at a time when the Soviet has resumed four-power trade talks in Berlin, and when North Korean and Chinese communists, after Russian suggestions, are holding truce talks in Korea. Also significant is an article by Alexander Troyanovsky, former Soviet ambassador to the United States, who is friendly to this country, and whose son, incidentally, graduated as valedictorian from the Friends School in Washington. But all this must not be taken as a genuine note of friendship from the Kremlin, according to the State Department, which commented this evening, "This is a new peace move intended to lull the free nations to sleep." Now a report from overseas. The British Labour government has taken a second look at its socialist precepts and offered an amendment. For that story, to London and Romney Wheeler.
Capitalism may be called on to save British socialism. Now that might sound like a contradiction, but it's not. Britain's Labour government plans to encourage capitalist competition in order to cut consumer prices. It's a complete reversal of socialist doctrine. I learned in Whitehall that the basic decision has been taken, a decision to amend Britain's basic price control policy. Up to now, inefficient distributors have been guaranteed enough profit to keep them in business. Now they're going to be told, if you can't stay in business, too bad. Try working for somebody else. You can see the political dynamite in that. That's why no announcement has been made yet. Indeed, why it may be delayed for some time. Nevertheless, the iron fist of inflation finally has convinced socialist ministers that only freer competition can keep consumer prices from going out of sight. That doesn't mean all controls will come off. Subsidized items like meat, cheese, and eggs will go on being controlled. But if the cost of subsidized items goes up, it'll be passed on to the consumer. This already has happened in the case of meat. The ration went up, and so did the price. Britain's treasury already is paying out $1 billion a year to keep food prices down. It would cost another $1.5 billion, a total of $2.5 billion all told, to offset recent increases, and Britain can't afford it. Meanwhile, Britain is asking other European nations to get together on some plan to stabilize the price of food and raw materials. Unless it's done, say the British, it's going to be disastrous for everyone. This is Romney Wheeler in London.
And now, around the world in 2 minutes, Tehran, Iran. By his own admission, Avril Harriman hasn't got very far in the Iranian oil controversy. He talked to the press today. What he said was, "I'm trying to combine reason with enthusiasm. Enthusiasm is a mild statement for the fever which is sweeping Iran." Madrid, Spain. What did Admiral Forrest Sherman, U.S. Chief of Naval Operations, talk about with Franco yesterday? Officially, it's a secret, but enterprising newsmen have come up with the report that he asked Franco for the right to use Spanish naval and air bases. And the names are given. Admiral Sherman, incidentally, will attend Franco's reception for the diplomatic corps tomorrow at the Generalissimo's Summer Palace. These developments are very unwelcome in London and Paris. British and French officials contend the moral loss of dealing with Franco is greater than the military gain. Washington. Last April, the government issued a ban on the spare tire. New cars from then on would have four tires only. Today, the ban was lifted. Not that we have a comfortable margin of rubber again, but the production of cars has been reduced by one-fifth. Washington, some political experts are saying it's a political race already between Senator Paul Douglas and President Truman. The issue, nomination of judges, is incidental. What matters is the fire in the eye of the senator. Today he challenged the president's decision to go over his head in the matter of judges and asked the Chicago Bar Associations to take a poll as to whose judges are better. It's practically a vote between Truman and Douglas, and it's another year before the Democratic Convention. New York. As of this moment, though the story is changing from hour to hour, 11 of the second string communists, it was 13 an hour ago, have been jailed for lack of proper funds. Also, the man who refused to tell who put up the bail for the four fugitive communists, namely Frederick Vanderbilt Field, was ordered back to jail today. London, 6 socialist members of parliament want to cut in half the yearly salary that goes tax-free to Princess Margaret beginning on her 21st birthday next month. All 6 come from Scotland. I'll be back in a moment with more news. Now here's Tom Moore.
Friends, when you have a miserable, uncomfortable, gassy feeling from acid indigestion, remember Alka-Seltzer's soothing action helps give fast relief. That's one reason why millions accept Alka-Seltzer as first aid for relief from acid indigestion. Dissolve 1 or 2 tablets in a glass of water and then drink it. You'll feel better in a jiffy with a clean, fresh taste in your mouth and a comfortable feeling in your stomach. There's nothing quite like Alka-Seltzer. Your drugstore has Alka-Seltzer. Now here again is Leon Pearson.
Here are signs of our times. The dark and vivacious nightclub singer Josephine Baker, who spent most of her recent years in France because the French, she says, don't have a color line, ran smack into the color line in the Biltmore Hotel in Los Angeles today. She requested the arrest of a man named Fred Harlan of Dallas, Texas, who said from the next table, "I won't stay in the same room with Negroes." There's a new wrinkle in the chain letter game. We get a letter that tells you, please send 6 copies of this letter within 3 days to 6 different people you know. Also send 1 pair of panties to the top name on the list. When your name reaches the top of the list, you should receive 36 pairs of panties. The panty club is blocking the mails.
Here's a late report from the NBC newsroom in Chicago. President Truman has landed at the Grandview, Missouri airport after his 800-mile tour of the Missouri-Kansas-Oklahoma flood area. He called the flood one of the worst disasters this country has ever suffered from water. Mr. Truman said the federal government must help put the area back on its feet again.
And that's the news of the world, transcribed and direct. Until tomorrow at the same time, this is Leon Pearson speaking for Alka-Seltzer, saying goodbye from the newsroom in New York.
Friends, did you take your one-a-day brand multiple vitamins today? Thousands of people did, and so protected themselves against vitamin deficiency disease. Lack of vitamins pulls you down, steals your normal pep and energy, makes you look and feel dull and listless. Why take chances? Protect yourself against vitamin deficiency disease by taking one-a-day brand multiple vitamins. Low in cost, yet no finer quality vitamins are made at any price. Ask for and insist on one-a-day brand multiple vitamins. Remember, one-a-day brand, vitamins.
Stay tuned for One Man's Family, which comes to you from California, following immediately. This is NBC, the national broadcasting company.
WDAF, Kansas City, Missouri.
Oldsmobile's your best buy, new or used. Davis Oldsmobile, Kansas City's old.
Dedicated to the promotion of closer understanding between the peoples of the Soviet Union and the Anglo-American world. The State Department's reaction in Washington, however, was not enthusiastic. This new line, said the department spokesman, contradicts the Soviet government's internal propaganda line of anti-Westernism and particularly anti-Americanism, a veritable flood of hate. But for that other flood, which we thought was purely domestic, the president has completed his aerial tour of this scene, and we shall bring you a report on that with comments in the president's own voice to station WDAF, Kansas City, and Walt Bodine.
The presidential plane, the Independence, is winging back to Washington tonight after taking off from the Kansas City Grandview Airport a little over an hour ago. The president came home today, home to see what the worst flood in American history had done to the areas he knew so well, in Missouri, Kansas, and Oklahoma. He made a grueling 800-mile aerial tour over the flood-ravaged land and was briefed steadily by federal officials during the flight. The big silver and blue Independence passed over the territory where 2 million acres have been flooded, 70,000 left homeless, more thousands thrown out of work, and where property damage totals more than $750 million. With the president were defense mobilizer Charles Wilson and the chief of the Army Engineers, Major General Louis Pick. When the plane landed after the tour this afternoon, Mr. Truman smiled and waved as he came down the steps. But the president's face was grim as he stepped before a battery of microphones to report where he had been and what he had seen.
We've just made an investigation of the flood situation
from St. Louis to Salina, Kansas, and from Salina to Miami, Oklahoma. And it is one of the worst disasters, I think, that the country's ever suffered from water. I'm informed by General Pick that it is the worst. I've had the Chief of Engineers, a representative of the Department of Agriculture, a representative of the Federal Housing Administrator, and the production director of the water production set up with me today, and they are expecting to work together to see if we can meet this situation as promptly as possible in every manner that is necessary to alleviate suffering and to put the community back on its feet again.
This is Walt Bodine in Kansas City.
For the relief of persons stricken by the floods, the Congress has now completed action, and very rapidly, on a bill appropriating $25 million. That's $10 million more than the President had asked for. The Korea ceasefire negotiations have begun their sixth meeting at Kaesong. The session opened right on time, recessed 55 minutes later. There is no firm news as to what was discussed. Now take the globe in your hand as it stands there on the library table and spin it around to Italy and Spain and Western Europe. The Italian peace treaty is to be revised to allow more arms to that former enemy country. And Spain is being invited to cooperate with the democracies for the defense of Western Europe. So the world turns. It was only 4 years ago the Italian peace treaty was signed in Paris. This correspondent was on hand for the ceremony in the Salon d'Horloge of the French Foreign Office. The treaty restricted Italy's armed forces to 175,000 men plus carabinieri. Italy was treated as a defeated enemy. But since that time, the new enemy has emerged, and in both the Atlantic and Pacific areas, free powers are banding together in defense. Japan is being offered a treaty with no punitive clauses, and will, with the full right to rearm. So Italy asks, why cannot we have the same right? An answer was given today by Secretary of State Acheson. He said, the United States will consult with other governments on the possible revision of the treaty. We wonder what other governments. The powers who drew that treaty were the big four, including Russia. Russia will never consent to the rearming of Italy. It will have to be done without her consent, if at all. Perhaps we've arrived at the point of denouncing the treaty on grounds that the other satellites have, under Russian direction, violated their treaties by arming beyond the treaty limits. Take this development on Italy together with the development on Spain, and the picture rounds out. Admiral Forrest Sherman, U.S. Chief of Naval Operations, has requested Generalissimo Franco the use of naval and air bases in Spain. This would complete the coverage of Western Europe by defense plans. Spain and Italy, plus the Atlantic Pact countries, brings in everybody but Switzerland. This will seal up the cracks and make for a sound defense if our allies do not break away. Already Britain and France have cried out in alarm against any sort of deal with Franco, and the result may be what it was in the case of rearming Germany. We are now proposing to flout Russian interests in three very delicate areas: the treaty with Japan without Russia, breaking the treaty with Italy without Russia, and making a deal with Russia's archenemy Franco. It's something we've been driven to by the frustration of diplomatic dealing with Russia, but it's a daring concept of defense. It may, in fact, prove to be a dangerous one. Here at home, the House today voted to sustain the present rollback on live beef prices and to permit a 10% cut in the price of all other farm products selling above parity. The vote was 207 to 123. In a sudden surge of strength, administration forces rammed through a compromise to that effect and also beat down three major attempts to curb price rollbacks in the bitter House fight over controls. Now, human interest in the news. How deep is California's culture? For the answer, to Hollywood and John Storm.
Hollywood's motion picture colony, always touchy about Eastern sneers at its phony culture, is pretty red-faced tonight. Looks like its two major claims to highbrow entertainment have gone out the window because people in movie town won't support them. The famous Symphonies Under the Stars and the Hollywood Bowl have been canceled after only 1 week of the new season. And the Pilgrimage play, an elaborate outdoor dramatization of the life of Christ, will close Saturday after only 2 weeks. Both the concerts and the play have been scheduled to run all summer. Actor Gene Herschel, president of the Hollywood Bowl Association, says the week of symphonies left the association with a $23,000 deficit. Only a handful of music lovers turned up in the 21,000-seat bowl to hear Deflatormouse. And attendance at the Pilgrimage play has averaged only 500 a night. No one is sure what kept art-conscious Southern Californians away from the two attractions, that the price of admissions may have been responsible. Tickets to the symphonies range from 90 cents to $3.60. Now, the AFL Musicians Union is dickering with the County of Los Angeles to resume the concert series at bargain prices. But until some plan is devised to revive the world-famous Symphonies Under the Stars, the outlook is grim indeed for culture in Hollywood. The Drunkard, an old-time melodrama with vaudeville between the acts and refreshments for the audience, has just entered its 19th year and is still going strong. But between you and I, even Hollywood knows that that one ain't culture. This is John Storm in Hollywood.
And now around the world in 2 minutes. Dublin, Wednesday morning. A fire that broke out at 1:30 a.m. has destroyed the main part of the famed Abbey Theater. Within half an hour, it had burned the stage and greater part of the auditorium. The Abbey became famous early in this century when it presented the works of a new school of Irish playwrights, among them Shan O'Casey and John Millington Synge. Its acting company included many who later became stars abroad, such names as Sarah Algood, Barry Fitzgerald. Pisa, Italy. Actress Ingrid Bergman is en route to her native Sweden for her first visit with her daughter in more than 2 years. The 12-year-old youngster is being taken to Sweden by Dr. Peter Lindstrom, the Hollywood physician who is Miss Bergman's former husband. Brussels. Vive le nouveau roi, shouted the crowds in Belgium today. Long live the new king. It was a tumultuous greeting to 20-year-old Baudouin, who had just taken the oath to succeed his father, Leopold III, as the Belgian monarch. Manila. 5,000 Filipinos protested the terms of the proposed peace treaty for Japan and burned in effigy the man who drew it up, our American John Foster Dulles. This was crowd action, but it was supported by the president, Quirino, who says the treaty does not provide for Philippine security. Washington, three members of Congress have called for American reprisals for the Czech treatment of the AP correspondent William Otis. Senator Monroney of Oklahoma, a Democrat, called for a break in diplomatic and economic relations with Czechoslovakia unless Otis is freed within 90 days. Senator O'Connor, a Democrat of Maryland, called for barring all foreign communist newsmen from this country. Moscow. A news conference in the Soviet capital tonight, called by 11 members of an American trade union delegation, which has been visiting Russia for several weeks. Among the delegates, Leon Strauss, vice president of the International Fur and Leather Workers. The American visitors said they had found no evidence of slave labor in the Soviet Union and no evidence of war preparations. Stuttgart, Germany. The Allied High Commission has banned the communist newspaper for 90 days. The paper is charged with publishing material prejudicial to Allied prestige and security. I'll be back in a moment with more news.
At 6:02, 6:30, 7, and 8 o'clock every weekday morning, and at 12:30, noon, and at 1, 5:45, 6:30, and 10 in the evening, WDAF and NBC bring you the news. For the latest local, national, and international happenings, keep tuned to WDAF. Now, in just a moment, we'll return you to the newsroom in Washington and Leon Pearson.
And here are signs of our times. An American woman set out for England today to swim the English Channel. Before leaving, she demonstrated her sledgehammer stroke, the name Betty Cohn, and the age of this would-be champion, 51 years. But older than Betty twofold is Robert L. Dring of Newport, Rhode Island, who voted for General Grant when he ran for a second term, and who has been driving his own car since 1916. Today he became 100 years old. What does the middle initial L stand for, he was asked. Well, he said, that stands for live long. A visitor appeared today at the Valley Forge Army Hospital, Pennsylvania, under his arm two books, biographies of Lou Gehrig and Joe DiMaggio. I've come to read, he said. Read for the blind patients. Colonel John Welch, the commanding officer, heard his story, gulped hard for a moment, and then smiled and signed the visitor on and volunteer aid in the hospital recreation, the youngest such hospital assistant on the rolls. For Eddie Vorjek of Paoli, Pennsylvania, could boast no more than 11 years. In Washington today, the Army announced that during the past 24 hours, no American soldier has been killed in action. And that's the news of the world transcribed and directed.
Kansas City is on the air every Wednesday night. Yes, at 7 o'clock tomorrow night, WDAF and NBC bring you Pete Kelly's Blues, a gripping mystery story woven around the Kansas City horn player during the fabulous 20s. Don't miss this new radio program, Pete Kelly's Blues, on WDAF tomorrow night at 7. News of the World with Leon Pearson will come to you again tomorrow night over WDAF at 6:30. This is WDAF, the Kansas City Star, Kansas City, Missouri.